So I'm here today with James Gardner, who's running for mayor for the city of Buffalo, and he is running on the conservative and Republican ballot lines. So I want to continue our conversations today that we've started already that are about what I'm going to call broadly the health of the city. And there's a lot of things that this covers, clearly. But the first one I want to talk about is how the city works or does not work for the people and the citizens who live here. And part of the reason I want to discuss that is I think overall, even nationally, there's great dissatisfaction with how government operates, which I think has led to several upsets in elections from, clearly Trump to, I think, recently Mamdani in New York, and then also India Walton here in Buffalo. And she probably would be mayor had it not been for a very well-financed and organized counter-effort, which I think was more about really keeping her out of power than keeping Byron Brown in power. So with that kind of background, what I'd like to ask you is, what's a specific problem that you see with the city of Buffalo as it relates to this and in the relationship between the city and its citizens? And then as you get into that, how would you go about approaching that and fixing it?
Sure. Well, first of all, JM, thank you very much for inviting me on. I really appreciate the opportunity to discuss this and other issues with you and your listeners. The way I think government would work best is I like to think of it as in terms of, and forgive the football metaphor, but sort of the offensive line. You shouldn't really notice it. And people really don't notice it until things don't work or there's a real problem with it. And I think that is what has really stirred up the level of interest in this mayoral election as opposed to others, is that I think every city resident realizes that there's been a sort of fundamental breakdown in how essential city services are being delivered. And to me, as you describe sort of the relationship between city residents and city government, I look to where those interactions occur. And first and foremost, everybody in the city of Buffalo puts their garbage out. Everybody in the city of Buffalo drives on the roads. Everybody in the city of Buffalo looks around hopefully uses the parks. Those are three core areas where the services, the essential services are needed by city residents. And I think those are three areas where those city services have been lacking and have been lacking for a very long time. And I think that's where you get a really growing level of frustration and disenchantment with how government is working, particularly in the city of Buffalo, is that there's that government has become more of a employment program in terms of patronage jobs and has become less of the delivery vehicle of essential services. And I think that ultimately is where any mayor, and particularly when I am mayor, how I will approach the job is people want and expect their garbage picked up. They want their garbage totes returned where they found them. They want streets clean. They want parks clean. They don't want to see refuse strewn all over their streets and up and down commercial corridors. They don't want to see grass growing, hip high on vacant lots. It's and that's the situation that we currently have, and I think it has a very negative effect not only on how city residents view their government, but how people view their city in general. It also is a huge hindrance in promotion of the city. I think everybody who's running in this race probably does want the city of Buffalo to thrive and to be, if we could all wave a magic wand and make it a place where everyone wanted to live, everybody wanted to do business, we would all do it. It's a question of how you accomplish that, given, you know, the realities of today in terms of budget numbers and political realities. So, but really when it comes down to it is there's an inherent bargain between residents, or there should be an inherent bargain between residents and municipal government. And at the fundamental level of that bargain is the delivery of essential services and emergency services, obviously, but the essential services of just making sure that the roads are plowed and that that garbage is picked up, and that at a minimum, if you have a complaint, someone gets back to you in a reasonable period of time. And those, they seem very simple, very Pollyanna-esque, but those essential things are not being done. And I think, I know that because I've tried to use those services and I've had experienced that level of disappointment. And I can assure you that in every corner of the city, people have had the exact same experiences.
Yeah, and what the things that you bring up are things that we're all paying for, mm-hmm. right, already. And so I think it's even more challenging to fix some of these things because it's really not, my question would be my assumption is that it's really not financial. It's more of a mindset of how these things, like how you actually, you just treat things. Like, you know, it can be as basic as like, how do you treat your own personal things in your own house? Do you like throw everything on the floor, or do you put it back on the bookshelf nicely? And so it made me, when you bring these things up, it makes me think of, you know, how we deal with potholes, for example. You know, you see the pothole truck driving around and they shovel a mound of like asphalt in that's like 6 inches higher than everybody's supposed to drive over and flatten it down. But of course, it just becomes another pothole. So I think that mindset is actually harder to change than saying, okay, you know, if it was simply as that there wasn't a pothole crew, we didn't have a budget for it. But clearly there is a budget for it, but we just don't care. That's this.
Yeah, it's a fundamental lack of accountability. I mean, and you use the word culture, accountability. I would say that they're in this context, they're interchangeable. I mean, the idea of you know, and I don't think it's necessarily the actual individuals who are working those city jobs. I think the vast majority of them are probably, you know, want to do a great job. It's a question of whether or not they're receiving the appropriate supervision, feedback, and ultimately someone holding accountable for the job that they're doing. You bring up potholes, and I mean, there's nothing more pathetic than in the winter somebody trying to, you know, the city workers out there trying to hot patch a canyon in the middle of Richmond Avenue. And, you know, as soon as the next snowplow comes, it's going to pop all that right back out and you're going to have another even larger canyon. It's amazing to me that something as simple as sealing the seams of asphalt roadways, which is routine in suburban municipalities, somehow is not done in the city of Buffalo. I mean, and you can... I drive down Forest or drive down Richmond today and you can see exactly where the seams of the asphalt are. And you know, as we all do, that over time with expansion and contraction, that's where you're going to have your first problem. And the easy way to solve it is just sealing that seam. And somehow something that basic doesn't get accomplished. And I think it's, you know, that is certainly contributes to my personal level of frustration, but I'm sure, I mean, we all drive the roads and I'm not an engineer. Even I know that that's going to be a problem, and ultimately it's going to contribute to the early, you know, the early milling down and reconstruction of that roadway when it would have been so easy and the lifespan of that road would have been extended had somebody just taken the time to seal the seam.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I would agree with you. You know, when the thing I said about, you know, people not caring, you know, when you, you know, you study anything about leadership or business or anything, and it does start at the top, right? So that the culture starts at the top. Mm-hmm. It doesn't never starts at the bottom. And so that trickles down all the way to the people that work for the city, the people that are doing the jobs, and to the citizens, like how you treat the city back, right?
Absolutely.
It is a cycle. And there are those people. I mean, I remember we had a guy that cut lawns for us. He died a couple of years ago, but he was a former city employee, and he would always talk about just how much, like, he cared because he worked for the city. Like, he was going to do a good job cutting the lawn because this was his city. He worked for the city. So
those people are hard to find.
Yeah.
You hold on to those people. I mean, that's what in any level of government or business, those are the people that you care about because or want to find, and they're worth more than their weight in gold because those are the people who take pride and ownership in what they do. And, you know, we wouldn't have any problems in the city of Buffalo if we had, you know, all layers of government were staffed by people like that. And it's a challenge to find those people. But when you do find them, you have to retain them. And you have to develop them because that's somebody who, if he shows that level of care and dedication in cutting the grass, my guess is he would take that level of care and dedication in overseeing the department that's in charge of cutting the grass. And to your point, that is how you foster an organization that's built on accountability, not only to the organization at the top, but to the people below and the organization as a whole. And that is that's how you get good functioning government.
So, I mean, I think what we're getting at is this, you know, something like this requires essentially an overhaul at the higher levels of government management. And I guess how do you go about doing that? How, you know, let's say you're, you know, today's the day after the election and you're the mayor. Like how do you approach that?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a daunting task. But the day after election, it really comes down to you have to not only look at, you know, you have to look at what your core mission is as a municipal government. And that's where I would start immediately is looking at the delivery of not only emergency services in terms of police and fire, but also delivery of those essential services and figure out how the city is delivering those services. I mean, I can tell you right now, just in terms of if you have the time or the inclination or really want to put yourself to sleep to leaf through the city budget as adopted for this year. And, you know, it is astonishing to see how our tax dollars are being spent and what they're being spent on. And something as simple, seemingly simple, like garbage collection, for example, turns out to be an incredibly complicated endeavor when you factor in the roles that it plays with, you know, on-street parking, the efficient mapping of the routes that garbage trucks take, the number of hours that members of the public works department, or I guess it would probably be the sanitation department, how many hours they work a day and how many people that you staff that each individual truck with and how many houses that individual truck is worth, is tasked with, how many houses that they have to visit and in a given day and in a given week, and really try to, maximize those efficiencies. And it's so clear in looking at the budget that those efficiencies are not being realized. I mean, in the past, I think it's past 4 years, the city budget has grown by over $64 million. Those $64 million haven't gone to improve services. The vast majority of that money has gone to payroll, and what return on that investment is City Hall getting? That is where I would start. You have to look at, and it's not, you know, those are economic terms, you know, and I'm keenly aware that City Hall isn't a business, but you have to look at what delivery of services the city is getting for each dollar expended. And right now, I would say we're, as city residents, we're not getting a very good return on that investment, because how could the growth of expenditures be that big and yet the problems remain so glaring? There's clearly a disconnect that clearly has to be addressed. And the only way to do it is, I think, with somebody like me who is really beholden to no one. No property developer is coming in and writing me a $10,000 check. No labor union is coming in and writing me a $10,000 check. I can go in day one motivated by one simple question. How is this best serving the citizens of Buffalo? And if it isn't, we need to take a good hard look at how we're doing it and what changes need to be made.
Well, I think that I agree with you. I think most people agree with your assessment. And I think that when we talk about things like potholes and, you know, the visible signs of things, that everybody knows that that's kind of the surface of what's behind. But I also feel like there is this kind of feeling right now where I think, and it comes from all the news and the talk about the budget and all the stuff, that like nothing's actually going to change, right? That there is this kind of feeling like, ugh. And I look back at, you know, I moved to Buffalo in 92, and you know, it was a very different city then.
Sure.
And you know, then I've, you know, seen things come back, seen all these small businesses open, seen the neighborhood start to get better. There was a real feeling of hope. I feel like right now that's kind of evaporating a mm-hmm. little bit, that there is like that like great feeling is kind of is dissipating a bit. And I guess, how do you get people to sort of reverse course on that? What are the things that you would do to change that?
So I think one of the, you know, there are two big issues that I think haven't really been talked a lot about in this campaign season, that I think have an outsized effect on the city itself. And one is education, and the other is jobs. Education, I mean, you moved here in 92. Were you married at the time?
I was single. I moved here to be a paramedic.
Okay. So you moved here, you weren't married, didn't have any children, and that is, I think, the blueprint that a lot of people, not just people who grew up in Buffalo, but a lot of people actually from other parts of upstate New York moved to, I mean, because if you're in Elmira or Utica and you can't afford New York, Buffalo is a pretty attractive alternative, particularly if you've gone to school at UB or Canisius or Buff State. It's an easy place when you're in your 20s to have fun, to enjoy yourself, because you get a big city feel for without the big city prices. We have bars and restaurants, and there seems to be like this great young energy when you're in your 20s. And then in the 30, when you turn 30 and people start getting married, people sort of disappear. And the reason that they disappear is people are confronted with the hard reality of, all right, we got married, we have a child on the way, where are we putting this child for their education? And people vote with their feet. And I would argue that one of the greatest drains in population for the city of Buffalo is attributed to our education system and the lack of feasible options available to parents. I think a lot of people would say, you know what, if we knew that our kid was going to get a quality education, I'd love to live here because I can walk to the co-op. We can walk across the street to a restaurant. We can have brunch together as a family. We can walk over to the park, and we can, you know, enjoy all of the things, the vibrant things that the city, up until I would say recently, offered. But there is no greater impediment to that than where are our kids going to get educated? And that's why I believe so ardently in school choice, in the development of the development of charter schools in the city of Buffalo. I think has been a lifeline for so many families who are still here. But those attendance to those schools is still based on lottery because there's still a wait list. Mm-hmm. And that is something that we need to support those schools, continue to hold them accountable for the educational outcomes that they achieve. But this should be a wonderful opportunity to nurture an environment which makes charter schools possible, because there's clearly a demand for them. You know, that's where you start seeing the explosion in population in Amherst and Orchard Park and Kenmore, is because people just, they got it. It's all about, it's driven by schools. And then that is a huge part of the problem in the city budget. Obviously plays, it's not a huge role, but the city, the mayor's office and the city budget contributes to the Board of Education budget. The mayor has a say in how education works in the city of Buffalo, and I think it has been silent for far too long. And I think that is one way that we can retain some of those 20-year-olds who are here and are excited and energized about living here, and allow them and their families to grow up in the city. And that is, and which is something that they want to do. And we have to make it easier for them to do that. The second prong is the job discussion, which is how can we attract and retain employers in the city and in this region. And that is the education discussion is a difficult one. The economic discussion is even more difficult, because you're running straight into, from my perspective, one of the most hostile administrations for business development in the nation. Albany has done absolutely nothing to support local businesses here and to create an environment where private businesses can start organically, thrive, and grow. And you talk to any small business owner, in the city of Buffalo, and they're going to tell you just how challenging it is to keep their doors open every day. And that is a huge problem that is not unique to Buffalo. It's, everybody in New York State has to deal with it. But I feel like it is compounded here, because there has been a total lack of leadership from the mayor's office probably for the past 60 years in trying to attract, retain, and grow local businesses here. Because if you don't have a job, you're going to vote with your feet. And that's what people have been doing for 50 years, 60 years.
Both of those things that you brought up, I'm going to address the education one first, and they're both probably things that we could talk about for a full hour.
Absolutely. Many hours.
Yeah. But the I'm interested in what you said about education, because, the job I have now is, I'm a real estate broker. So I do see that come up. And I would say that one of the things I have seen is with the charter schools, more families are staying in the city. So I agree with that. I also see the stress that everybody goes through. Like, did we get into Olmsted? Did we like,
sure.
And it's like all these, like,
right.
So I'm part of this whole, that thing that you're describing, but one of the things I've heard, and so I will admittedly say I don't understand this, so if you can sort of explain it to me, is that the mayor's office, what I've heard is the mayor's office and the city doesn't actually have any control over the school system, the way our school system is structured. Unlike, let's say, New York City, where there is, I believe there's a commissioner.
Mayoral control,
right,
is what the city, what New York City has. Right. That was, I think, Bloomberg fought for it, got it. And the mayor's office in New York is much more involved. I mean, ultimately the mayor there in New York is much more accountable to how public education runs in New York City than in Buffalo. There's no question about that. We have a independent school board here I think in the past 2 days they just hired a new superintendent, and they are largely in charge of overseeing, which is, you know, a budget that is larger than the city of Buffalo's budget. And they are, you know, but the city, the mayor, and city government plays an important role there. Certainly the Board of Education derives some of their money, comes from the city of Buffalo. And I think what the mayor has to do, and what I will do, is fight for accountability for how the public education system is in Buffalo is run. And that, I think, is where, you know, it's been very easy, and politically it makes perfect sense for prior administrations to say, that's not on us. We don't have any control over it. Can't do anything about it. They run their own thing. We can't. You're the mayor of the city of Buffalo. And I would argue that there's no greater issue that impacts the population of this city, the growth of this city, than education. And I believe strongly that the bully pulpit of the mayor's office would be a vital tool in really establishing some level of, it's not just accountability, but a turnaround of how the education system in Buffalo is working. And I don't mean to come out and say that I don't value Buffalo Public Schools. They have a very difficult job. The teachers that work there are, you know, they are dedicated to their craft, and there are a lot of factors that that affect the you know, how those schools function. We should have both. Actually, three things. We should have high performing traditional public schools, high performing charter schools, and a third class of, we should have some of the best trade schools in America right here. I mean, this is with our manufacturing heritage and the historical connection that our city has with the trades, this should be the bedrock of training America's skilled labor force. Because, you know, AI isn't going to take the job of an electrician or a plumber or a carpenter or any of those other trades. And in fact, I think you could argue that those trades are going to become even more important moving forward. And how it is that we haven't tapped into that market in terms of developing. And I know the way that it works now is, if you're in a trade school, they, you know, they dedicate certain number of hours at certain schools to teaching the trades. What I'm talking about is, you go to a trade school and they teach you, you know, the basics of, you know, reading, math, and, you know, everything you need to be an engaged citizen. But the focus is really training people to do the jobs that need to be done, whether it's a machinist, mechanics, electricians, plumbers, so that when they get out of, when they graduate from those programs, they walk in job ready day one and they're ready to go. You don't need an apprentice program anymore, because you graduated from the best technical and trade school that the United States produces, and it's in Buffalo, New York. That's what I'd love to see happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think anybody that has had to hire anybody in the trades in the last, let's say, 5 to 10 years in Buffalo, and it's getting worse and worse and worse, is finding people.
Absolutely.
I mean, there is this was a national thing that we've spent so long telling everybody that they need to go to college, that we forgot about the fact that we still have plumbing, right?
You know? Yeah, it's the one thing that's not going away, right? It's not going to be solved by a computer, right? You need, yeah, I mean, it's It is, and I mean, that I feel very, very strongly about it. It's just that those skills are increasingly difficult to find, and they become increasingly lucrative for the people who have them. And I mean, I don't know that it's really worth your time. I mean, I as a lawyer, I look back on it all the time and say, you know, I probably would have done better in life in terms of my career choice had I become a master electrician. I mean, I won't use the word, well, I will. It's like, it's almost a license to steal. You can name your own price because there's just no competition for it. And everybody needs your services. And in a time where everyone's wondering, you know, casting around, wondering what their college degree is worth, here's something where you graduate, you're walking into a great paying job that you're going to be able to support your family. And on top of it, if your kid wants to go to that trade school, it's available. And if they don't, we have a robust education system that's going to keep you in the city of Buffalo.
Yeah. And I would say, I mean, historically, Buffalo had that, and, you know, Hutch Tech still is one of the public schools that has a solid reputation. But I can remember, you know, you talking to, you know, conversations with, you know, older people, you know, that, you know, older generations, going through Hutch Tech was like, you were really proud of that.
Yeah.
Like, that was something, like, I went to Hutch Tech for this.
Yes.
And so we have that legacy, right? The city does. So it's really sort of reinforcing and rebuilding that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, most people in this region, you go back one or two generations and there's somebody who, whether they worked at a steel plant, worked in a grain mill, and they were good, you know, they were good paying jobs. And, you know, and part of, you know, the larger issue of the, you know, deindustrialization of our region in particular is that those, you know, somewhere along the lines, those skills became less important, and it was more important for you to, you know, to gain a you know, Bachelor of Arts degree from a college that you're going to have to borrow money in order to accomplish, and then what? And I think it sells short the idea that the trades are not only a fantastic way to support your family, but that they're vitally important. And I would argue just as important as any of those other professions, you know, quote unquote, white collar jobs that everybody aspires for. I mean, I think it's been, we've done a disservice to ourselves and drifting away from our heritage in that way.
Well, I want to touch quickly on the employment thing. I don't know if we won't have enough time to go too deep into it, but I guess one of the things that obviously I think everybody would agree with you, but we see things around here, like, let's say, the Tesla plant, which is was a massive giveaway that it seems very, I don't know, does anybody actually know if it's paid off in any kind of substantial way at all? And I also then question, you know, as somebody that has started small businesses, and I know a lot of people who have, just how arduous and difficult that is, both at the local and state level here. And then, so in order to attract these big businesses, it seems like we just, you know, we give away the farm, and we give it, like, wasn't it $750 million?
I think it was more than that. To create that, the boondoggle down there and you know, what became the Tesla plant. Ultimately, this is where I have a huge philosophical difference with how New York State, its current leadership and the leadership over the past several decades has approached economic development. They have thought that it's essentially this sort of silver bullet mentality that, oh, we're going to lure in some big employer and make it so attractive that they're going to come here and they're going to stay here and they're going to do this work and they're going to grow and they're going to employ all these people. And it almost never works. I mean, I would say it never works. The fact that the Tesla plant is still there and still employs almost 3,000 people is frankly better than what I would have expected when Andrew Cuomo announced it however many years ago. I mean, the approach to sustainable economic development is making the climate in general more user-friendly and business-friendly, not keeping it a hostile business environment in terms of the layers of taxation and bureaucracy that business owners, whether you're a large, medium, or small business owner, everybody has to deal with the same level of frustration. And then excusing, making all these exceptions to those rules for the chosen few. It's essentially government picking winners and losers, and it doesn't work, because essentially as soon as those subsidies, as soon as those giveaways end, what happens? They pack up their bags and they head down to South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, wherever else they want to go to, Texas, where it's a more advantageous climate, where business, it's easier to do business. Fundamentally, New York State has to change the way it does business. They have to make it a more attractive place to do business, because we just aren't going to compete in any sustainable way with the southern half of this country. And that's where, I mean, we all know people who, you know, we grew up with and who our neighbors are, and it's not just when they retire that they, you know, take a job and go somewhere else. It's when they come out of college, as much as people would love to come and work in Buffalo, the jobs are where the jobs are. And so it we have to get away from this sort of magic pill solution to these big problems. And it requires some real self-reflection on behalf of the government leaders that got us here. And I'm not in any way positive that they're going to engage in that self-reflection, which is why people need to vote a different way, because nothing will change if you keep returning the same people who hold the same ideas, particularly as it relates to economic development. And we're withering on the vine as a result. You really have to embrace the idea that job creation, being a business owner, being a business developer isn't a dirty word. People need jobs. Not everybody can work for nonprofits and whatever else to try and better the world. People who employ people better the world, because they are providing an opportunity for the people that work for them to provide for their family and invest in their community. And that is we began earlier talking about a shift in attitudes. That is a huge attitude shift that has to happen. And I think, you know, it needs to happen on the local level here, just as it has to work, it has to shift on the state level in Albany.
Yeah, one thing I want to pick out of what you said, which I think is an important point, you know, it is about leveling the playing field, and there's a local West Side builder supply company, and I've gone there for years, and you know the same people have been working there and forever, and I can remember just how mad he was when Home Depot opened, mm-hmm. and the giveaways that they gave to Home Depot to open up on Elmwood. And he was like, I don't get any of this. Like, and I'm not, you know.
He's not looking for a handout. He's just looking for an even competition, right? Yep. That is the level of frustration that is shared widely. And unfortunately, somebody, you know, that is how the Democratic Party does economic development. And it is at least the Democratic Party in New York State and Erie County, and it is fundamentally unfair to the people who have scraped struggled and strived to build their own business and keep it afloat without a nickel of any kind of government support. It's just, it's fundamentally and morally wrong. And I cannot be any more opposed to that approach to restoring our economic well-being here.
Yeah, just one last thing to wrap up. I think to me what that has always pointed out, if the little guy can make that business work without handouts, then the big guy certainly can too. And what happens is the big guys come in and they're like, they just crank these politicians' arms behind their backs and say, look, we're only going to do this if mm-hmm. you do this for me. And I think, I would say everybody is like, I think, tired of that.
Imagine what that $700 million could have done for local businesses here if it had been spread around and dedicated toward tax relief. You know, people don't realize, the average resident doesn't realize just how much higher business taxes are in the city as opposed to residential taxes. The ability to give business owners a level of relief, sustainable relief that they can project out years and make planning decisions based upon a more advantageous business climate would pay dividend over dividend over dividend over time, because it's those real costs of those fixed costs of doing business in Buffalo and in New York, particularly in Buffalo and in New York State, that's what hinders development. That's what hinders investment. And, as I said, my argument would have been, instead of, the Buffalo billion for Tesla or building that project, imagine what that Buffalo billion would have looked like in terms of general relief.
Well, just a couple questions to wrap up. How is a leader, and how are you informed by all of these ideas that you're bringing up? Like, where does your information come from?
Oh, well, I mean, a lot of it, for better or worse, comes from, my own life experience, in terms of, living in the city of Buffalo, working, both in, my, careers in public service, and also just, my day-to-day life. I mean, which is, I think, probably how most people sort of get their concepts, I suppose. It's, I look at a lot of what other cities have done, across the country. I have a aunt and uncle that live in Milwaukee, and, they had a mayor there by the name of John Norquist, who was sort of a revolutionary guy who sort of defies easy pigeonholing, which is, I won't say that I want to emulate and be exactly like John Norquist, but I think what his example showed was a good idea can come from anywhere, and good ideas aren't ideologically driven. And that ultimately, I think, is where the leadership of the city of Buffalo needs to go, is you've got to take every good idea, regardless of where it comes from. And you can't say, well, that's a trickle-down economic idea that doesn't work, or that's a socialist concept that we're not... You got to look at everything. We don't have the luxury of being picky in terms of solutions. You have to be willing to embrace ideas wherever they come from, take a good hard look at it, and to make that fundamental, ask that fundamental question, which is, will this make the lives better of city residents? And if it will, do it. If it doesn't, and it benefits some other interest, don't do it.
That my last question then is sort of connects to that your point. Are you familiar with Ezra Klein and his book Abundance?
You know, what's funny is I haven't read the book, but I've actually met Ezra Klein because he is a good friend of mine and was at her wedding. So I haven't read the book. I know who he is, and I've shaken his hand, and we traded some political jokes at each other's expense. But that's about the extent of my knowledge of him personally.
Well, the book is, it's creating a lot of buzz in Democratic circles. People either fiercely opposed to what he's saying or embracing it, but. He is talking about these kind of things that we just need, we need to get back to doing. We need to get back, just making things, building things, mm-hmm. making things happen. And we've become bogged down in bureaucracy and regulation and all of these things. So it's creating a more of a stir than he himself expected.
Well, that's usually that's a good thing. So.
Well, James, thanks for coming on, and look forward to the next conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.